Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Welcome to Stars Matter, a recruiting podcast from The Athletic. I'm Mitch Light. He's Ari Wasserman. Ari, how you doing, bud?
We also work at The Athletic. Good. How are you?
Yeah, we do. I used to introduce us both at The Athletic, but then you said I was saying The Athletic too many times in the intro, so I tried to be a little more concise.
Yeah, you were more concise.
I can't please you, basically.
But, no, we were more concise, and that was definitely the best intro that you've done. But now, next week when we do it, just go, The Athletic's recruiting podcast. I'm Ari Wasserman, you know, whatever.
But I'm not Ari Wasserman.
Yeah. Okay. This is going to be a big show today.
It is. Okay, we got some great questions, some great mailbag questions. Keep them coming to Ari for his written mailbag, which he does on Tuesdays. We take a lot of the questions from that. Some he answers in the mailbag, some he doesn't. We got a great one that we're going to have a lot of fun with.
I say that like I read all of them, and they're really, really good. And
yeah,
it's really hard to choose sometimes. And I'm really happy that we put some of these on the podcast because, you know, I even might suggest to you that we don't add a prompt this week because there were so many good ones from the week before, you know, and I don't want people to feel like we're ignoring them or they're missing out. It's just, you can only have four or five a week and there's like 30 good questions. It's really, really hard to manage. So I'm happy that we can at least address a few of them on the show.
Right. And the best way to get Ari to address a question or us to talk about in the pod is like a theory type one. You know, we like all of them, but the where's this kid going? Where do you see this class? The specifics about a class, it's more just the big picture stuff that Ari likes to attack. And if you listen to the podcast, stuff that we like to talk about. It's kind of the calm before the storm in recruiting as far as commitments go. Ari, not a lot going on. Some movement in the 2023 class. One of your favorite things, the famed Massachusetts to Michigan pipeline was very active this week with Michigan got a big tight end commitment from a four-star Andrew, I guess it's Raplia from Milton, Mass. So kind of joke there because what are the origins of the was it Don Brown basically when he
yeah,
got
it was
hired
Don
there?
Brown.
They were gonna mine Massachusetts.
Yeah, it's like funny because it's just like picking this huge recruiting strategy and then attacking a place that doesn't have it's like I'm going to mine for gold in a place that doesn't have gold. You know what I mean?
And then New Jersey.
Yeah. And, you know, actually Michigan ended up getting a few good players out of there. Yeah. So I'm not saying it was a complete waste, but I was always baffled by the idea of like, you know, of all the places that Michigan could spend all these resources and time, you know, you would probably pick a place like Atlanta or something. You know what I mean? Or a place that has a ton of top end talent. And like, I don't know. It'd be interesting to go look up, Mitch. I bet you that Massachusetts hasn't had a five-star prospect maybe in the history of the recruiting rankings.
Yeah, there's that. That's a good question. They do all right. I mean, there's usually, I'd say, probably, 3 to 5 P5 guys a year from Massachusetts. Or is that pushing?
Yeah, and I'm low P5 guys. I mean, like, yeah. I don't know this Andrew Raplia tight end.
He's number 332 in the 2023 class.
Which is good. You know, and for a tight end, the rankings are usually dinged a little bit because tight ends aren't ranked the same way that other positions are. So, like, to me, if I see the number 332 overall player as a tight end and the number 20 tight end in the country, you know, I ignore the fact that he's from Massachusetts and say that's probably a pretty solid tight end. And also, yeah, Michigan has done a very good job of identifying and developing their tight ends. So, like, that one doesn't strike me as something to make fun of. But some of the other ones, like some linebackers that they got that ran a 6-second 40-yard dash out of that. It's like, I don't even know what we're doing. You know what I mean? So
I knew that would get you going.
Yeah.
All right. Michigan State got a nice commitment, a four-star running back, Kedrick Riscano from New Caney, Texas, number 219 overall. So Michigan State in the news for a non-transfer. So those are really the 2023 class. Very quiet in 2022. Oregon got a commitment from Hawaii. Kawika Rogers, offensive lineman, unranked, interesting there. And then Clemson, two commitments, unranked wide receiver Cole Turner from Birmingham, his older brother Nolan Turner played at Clemson, and a three-star cornerback Miles Oliver. And then one quick note, in the 2023 class, I just looked ahead. I was curious. Off the top of your head, how many five stars do you think have committed from the 2023 class?
Seven.
Five. Five. Yeah. So I think we'll see a flurry in the next month or so. Maybe not a flurry, some, and then it'll probably get real quiet until the evaluation periods and in the spring and camps and all that stuff. You did a story.
Do you think that this Cole Turner receiver that Clemson just got, who's unranked, is going to turn out to be like the next great like slot receiver that runs these most amazing routes, as slippery as hell and can't get tackled by anybody? Is he like Hunter Renfro?
I don't know.
That's the thing about Clemson, though. It's like, we had Grace on the show a few weeks ago. It's just like, do they still have the magic? Like, did they just sign Hunter Renfro?
If they do, we'll look back on this episode. But, yeah, I mean, and that's kind of what I want to talk about. He's a three-star, ranked 951. They also, that was the cornerback, Miles Oliver. Cole Turner was unranked. I want to talk about some three-stars. You did a story last week. You went out to go to his high school, Andrew Paul, a running back who's ranked in the 1200s nationally, who I just noticed one day on Twitter that he had an offer from Clemson, did a little research. Michigan was offering, Oregon was offering, and just kind of tease that story, and just a real interesting case, because he's not some guy who was hurt and missed his junior year. He put up big numbers at a high school in Dallas. It's not like he was doing it in Massachusetts or anywhere. He's not a hidden gem out there.
Yeah, and he's a really solidly built kid. Like, when I was in the same room with him, I was like, yeah, this looks like a power five running back to me, you know? And sometimes it's like really hard, because throughout my entire career, I've gone to thousands of high schools and talked to all these prospects in person.
I bet you haven't been to thousands of high schools. That's a lot of high schools.
Maybe a thousand. Okay. I've been to a lot of high schools. Maybe not, I don't know. Thousands is also an expression, but Mr. Yeah. Literal over here can't handle it. I've been to a lot of high schools, and every coach will tell you that their kid is really awesome. So, like, I try my best to decipher, like, what is real and what's not. But based on the conversations that I have, I try to take cues of, like, okay, this makes sense. This is real, or this kid's legit. And, you know, because everybody can rattle off their crazy high school stats, and they did a great job, and they led them to a state championship. There's a lot of really good high school players that aren't Power 5 prospects. But this kid is legit. And I think based on the behavior of the coaches, I mean, if I follow the head coach from Parish Episcopal on Twitter now, and it's like they had a parade of coaches in their building.
Dan Lanning was yesterday.
Dan Lanning was there. So, like, I mean, I get it. And I think it's interesting when someone's a fast rising prospect like this, because you go from having no offers really in September to major, major offers now. And part of the reason why that happens too is that programs who don't have a running back become more desperate to take somebody lower on their board. So I understand, too, that that's part of the deal.
Like, Clemson just lost was Trevor Etienne
to Florida. Right,
so they're trying to add a running back.
Now Clemson needs a running back, and that means that their willingness to offer somebody that wasn't offered before changes because of a need that they need to address on their roster. But places like Clemson don't offer kids that stink. You know, you don't want to add a player who can't play to your roster, because then you have an albatross around your neck. So, like, I'm very excited to see how this plans out. And I personally hope that Mizzou gets him. And I think we're going to talk a little bit more about Mizzou later on in the show. But they are as a person who can appreciate a good evaluator or a good evaluation job, I look at what Eli Drinkwitz and his staff did, being the first to really evaluate him the proper way and offer him and go all in on him. Coach Looper, the running backs coach at Mizzou, told him that he's the SEC running back before anybody else did. It'd be nice to see the team that believed in you get you. You know what I mean? And I know it doesn't work that way once Clemson and other teams get involved. But wouldn't it be cool, like, people say, like, how could you flatten the recruiting curve? I don't know if that makes sense. That sounds like a COVID thing. Okay. How do you like flatten how do you create the parody of in college football? Wouldn't it be great if like the first person to offer every prospect got them? Like that was the way recruiting worked.
You'd have a lot of early offers out there, but I know what you're saying.
But also too, though, you'd have to be, You'd have to be careful because
yes.
if you fill up your class with a bunch of trash, then your team's going to suck. So like
there's a great cliche in coaches in recruiting. It's not the ones that you miss that get you beat. It's the ones that you take and can't play.
Yeah,
get you beat.
Wouldn't that be a really
Missouri,
crazy
one thing about Missouri,
way to do it though? Like,
Missouri even
that.
Previous staff that's been a running back school in recent years. They have had some very good running backs. Now every school has running backs that produce, but it's not like going to Missouri would be if you told Andrew Paul 8 months ago, you're going to end up at Missouri, he'd be like, sure, sign me up. But, you know, he went to Michigan last week. He's got a lot to decide in the next few weeks.
I'm a little disappointed that you weren't more enthusiastic about my idea to fix recruiting.
No, I like it. It's interesting because, and in fact, your best friend, although I thought I was your best friend, Bill Landis is working on a story about the first offer and the balance that schools have to play to offer a kid. Smaller schools, G5 schools might not offer a kid because then he's kind of discovered and other schools are, you know, they might lose him to a bigger school. So it's a balance there. But I kind of like that because if you offer a kid, it would be a committable offer. And if you, like you said, I would never use this term, but if you start filling up your class with trash, then, you know, you got to rethink your strategy. So.
Trash is also an expression. I don't mean the people are trash. I just mean, if you take somebody that can't play.
We know what
school,
you mean, Ari.
Well, you obviously didn't. So
I did know what you mean. I just said I wouldn't use that term.
But yeah, I think that like picturing a world of college football where if you offer somebody who hasn't been offered yet, you get him. But then you're stuck with him forever would be like the craziest game show of all time. Like watching like the way that one class would fill up would be like, I'd take money out of my checking account just to watch a simulation of that.
Yeah.
So the 5-star prospects would come off the board immediately and they might end up at Eastern Michigan. You never know who gets the 5 stars. And then like, that would be like true evaluation Olympics.
Can we do that for 1 year, for one
just
class?
1 year, just to see how it works.
Yeah, yeah. Just see how it works, and you can transfer after that. So another 3-star, Miguel Mitchell, a name, 3-star safety from Oxford, Alabama, had committed to Vanderbilt in the summer, decommitted sometime during the season, and then didn't hear from him for several months. And then after the season, he's looking at Florida, USC, others, Tennessee. He just committed to Florida. He's number 891 overall, number 34 in Alabama. So here's my question to you, kind of a theory question. Does it make sense for some kids? Now, the theory is that a kid in that range should just lock up his spot early and sign early. But does it make sense for some kids to bet on themselves with so much turnover in the coaching carousel now? Here's a kid that USC and Florida, new coaches, had smallish classes. They're not going to take anyone, but they're looking to fill up their spots. He kind of took advantage of that, where in a normal cycle, no coaching turnover, he might not be at Florida. So does that make sense for some kids, or would you advise just lock up that spot?
I don't think that there's any one way to view it, because the other hand, too, is that if you go to a place because of circumstance, you're probably going to leave after a year anyway. You know what I mean? So like,
if he's not good enough,
yes,
for his
right.
Back, yeah.
And a lot of times too, coaches get desperate or they need to fill spots. And I'm not saying that Miguel Mitchell can't play. Maybe he'll be the best player in Florida's class when we look back in 3 years. But just to come up with like a uniform way of going about it, it'd be really hard, you know?
Yeah.
Because you could be the number 891 overall player and still be the 891 overall player like he is. And then nobody wants you.
Yeah.
You know, so like to me, you got to have to read the tea leaves a little bit on what you want to do in your recruitment. Also, too, just because you committed doesn't mean that coaches can't get involved or interested. You know, if somebody really likes you, you know, if he stayed committed to Vanderbilt, like Florida still could have called him.
Sure.
So and maybe they wouldn't have because they would view him as locked up or, you know, a lowly rated prospect that, you know, wouldn't be interested or. They're not interested in, if you see what I'm saying. But, I mean, it's worked out well for him, but I don't know why it wouldn't have worked out for him the same way if Florida believes in the way that he can play. And if he were still committed at Vanderbilt, he would still be a flip prospect, right? Like, do you see what I'm saying? I don't know.
Yeah, totally. I just thought it was interesting because two schools that he was really looking at were USC and Florida that, because of the way...
Yeah, earlier in the process, he might not have had an opportunity to go to.
Right, because both of those schools have small classes right now.
I do think that there are situations where holding out is a good thing to do. And I don't know, are you the one who talked about the basketball thing?
Yeah, I would say that a big man should wait, a marginal big man should wait and sign, not sign early. He will, if you're looking for better offers, but like you said, you might end up at a place where you aren't good enough to play, and then you end up transferring back to that level where you probably should have signed to begin with.
But in a world where the transfer portal exists and you can leave freely, I would always shoot for the biggest possible school, because if it doesn't work out, then you can transfer to the place you would have gone to anyway.
Yeah, totally.
You've nothing to lose by shooting your shot. Like, that's why I think, too, it's like the transfer portal, I wonder if it's going to change the psychology of a lot of these prospects who, like, were concerned about depth charts at places, you know? If you were concerned about a depth chart in the past, you wouldn't want to go there because you'd be stuck behind a bunch of people, and you want to go to a place with a clearer path to the field. Now it doesn't matter. You can bet on yourself and join a team that has a stacked position group that you're in. Try really hard to make a difference, and if you don't, then you can leave anyway. So I think that, like, giving players the ability to change their circumstances is a good thing for the sport and an interesting thing way to impact recruiting.
Yeah. Another three-star I wanted to talk about. I don't know if you saw this. Christian Capel wrote about him about a month ago, maybe 3 weeks ago. Joshua Wood, quarterback from Seattle, had been committed to Eastern Washington, put up huge numbers at a big school. I think it's Graham Kapalson's the school. Team went 14-0. They beat Suwanee Collins from Georgia, obviously Travis Hunter's school, in the Geico State Championship Series. So obviously this is a big-time school. Had no FBS offers till last month. Offers now from Fresno State in Nevada. His dad played at Washington State. Again, he just decommitted from Eastern Washington. So we always talk about quarterbacks available late. He's a guy to watch. My guess is he ends up at Fresno State. I mean, of all Fresno State and Nevada offer, but I haven't seen the kid play. I watched a little bit of his film, but I just, putting up those kind of numbers at a school that goes 14-0 and is good enough to beat, you know, one of the better teams in Georgia on national TV in Las Vegas, I can't believe he had no FBS offers until
this is
now.
The type of kid, like, I got a question in the mailbag that I actually answered in written form about Washington State.
Yeah. Like, why doesn't Washington State offer
Washington
this kid?
Should just take a chance on him. Yeah, his dad played there. You know, and again, if you're an evaluation, a good evaluator, and you look at him and say, this guy's a product of the team around him, he won't be able to play in the offense that we run. His arm isn't strong enough, or whatever.
By the way, same high school as Dylan Morris, the current, well, probably not next year, but the starter this year at Washington.
I can understand just not taking anybody that has a cool story. So, like, you know, it's easy for us to get wrapped up and be like, oh my God, this guy's awesome. And, you know, if he's going to go play at Fresno State, he could be like Jake Haener and be really, really good and not be at a Power 5 school. And why wasn't Washington State taking a risk on this guy? And it's like, I get it. Like, you can't just offer every single kid at the quarterback position that's like this every year. You're going to run out of room, you know? But this is the type of guy that, I mean, you take a chance on, right? And if he turns out to be really, really good, then maybe he's the catalyst that makes Washington State more of a Pac-12 North contender and, you know, a candidate to do something bigger than what they've done in the past. You know, and at this position, most especially, is where I would take risks. So, you know,
Jeff Tedford obviously thinks he's good enough. I mean, Tedford just offered him.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting, too, is just, like, watching these recruitments play out, and then in 3 years, like, how they, like, that's what's so fun about recruiting. It's like we can theorize and discuss what you would do if you were the head coach at Washington State, and just, like, it'll be very easy to see that if this kid puts up 5,000 yards of offense at Fresno State for us to sit back on this podcast in 3 years and go, what the hell is Washington State doing?
Right.
And if he sucks, never talk about it again. So,
Right. And that's why I wanted to bring up. So three stars we brought up. So in 2 years, if they're good, you can say you heard it on Stars Matter. Andrew Paul, running back from Dallas, Miguel Mitchell, safety from Alabama, and Joshua Wood, quarterback from Eastern,
Seattle. into the Andrew Wood story, I wrote about him. So he's on The Athletic.
Andrew Paul.
Andrew Paul. What did I say? Andrew Woods?
Yeah.
It's Joshua Wood. One of my best friends is named Brandon Wooden, so, and we call him Beat Woods.
I thought Bill Landis was your best friend.
I've got like 10 really good friends.
I know.
This is going to be really
good. Okay, am I at least in your good friend circle?
Yes.
Okay. You said I was ninth a couple weeks ago. I was
ninth
hurt by
is actually pretty good. Like, we're putting together a wedding list right now, and it's a real battle.
Ooh, okay.
It's only a 75-person wedding, and, like, we are, like, having a real hard time.
Yeah, I had some tough cuts. Ours was 110. Some tough cuts.
Yeah, and Brent has more friends than any human being on the face of the earth. So it's like...
That's annoying.
And the other thing, too, is that we're at the age now where everybody has a spouse, which also messes everything up. So like if you have a 75-person wedding...
So are you more likely to invite someone who's divorced? Theoretically, we're only going to
be inviting 40 people that we like because everybody else is an at plus one.
If I got divorced in the next few weeks, would I have a better chance of getting invited?
I mean, we're at the point now when people say no, it's like a relief.
Yeah. Okay, I'll have to consider that.
Because I don't want to hurt people's feelings, you know?
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. It's fair. It's tough.
There's like family members that I'm inviting.
It's like a recruiting class. You only have a certain enough slot. You can't offer everyone.
You got to have 5-star guests, Mitch.
I know. By the way, baby's still a 5-star. Saw a picture yesterday. Sometimes, you know.
Oh, she's the cutest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Sometimes, you know, the babies, you get a prospect who's 5-star early in their career and they don't pan out, whatever. Baby, so far, still 5-star baby.
I've gotten to the phase of parenthood where I'm sending unsolicited pictures of my child to people. So,
no, I love it. I love it.
That's where I'm at in my life right now. But yeah, I appreciate that.
And I showed it right to my wife and said, cute baby.
All right. How could it come from my gene pool?
I know. But it's weird because she looks just like you, but she's super cute.
Yeah.
But
everybody says she looks just like me, and I don't know like what it's like for you because I think that your kids look like you too. No,
people say my daughter looks just like me.
Yeah, Zoe looks just like you, and I just don't. But like as a parent, I can't see it myself.
Yeah. Well, totally agree there.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Okay, we got some great questions, but the first one we're going to do is more. We're going to spend some more time on because it's a real fun subject. This was from Max C. How would you rank the top 10 head coaches when it comes to recruiting, factoring in how they do relative to the school they're at? So we independently came up with our top 10. I actually have 12, some honorable mention guys. This was fun but difficult to do, weighing in like where I think that's the important thing. Where are you at? A lot of schools are easier to recruit to than others. New coaches, how do we factor in a Marcus Freeman or a Dan Lanning? So we can go. You get your headphones back on there, champ.
Sorry, my headphone fell out.
Yeah. So we can go down the list. One each, like I'll give.
I'm having
one,
a really hard time with this, Mitch. By the way,
yeah, no, this is really tough. And also, like, if this were a story that you were working on, we'd do some more research. I would find out like this guy's average class is
on this thing.
Yeah, this is just. I mean, I spent some time on this, but I wasn't diving into the numbers.
How much time did you spend on it?
I think I spent 15 minutes, and then I tweaked it a little bit.
Okay.
How much time did you spend? I'm guessing like 2 minutes.
9 minutes, maybe.
Okay.
2 minutes, maybe.
All right. So top 10 recruiting head coaches.
Okay.
Who's your number one?
My number one is Nick Saban.
Nick Saban.
Okay.
And it's not just because he's at Alabama. Like, he built this, to what it is. Alabama was not a number one recruiting school when he took over.
Also, Alabama has set the standard and was the pacemaking car. What's the car in the NASCAR race that, like?
I think pace car. Pace car.
No
one signed these super classes until.
Yeah, and then he made it the standard. He's like what right. LeBron James did in the NBA, making super teams is like a regular thing now. Yeah. And his ability to continue to do it over the long term too. I mean, he signed eight top classes in America like out of 9 or 10 or 11 years, right? I don't know what the stat is.
I think it's
like
9 out of 11.
9 out of 11 is an insane. Before this year. That's almost as impressive to me as winning the national championship six times.
It's probably is more impressive to you.
Yeah. But I mean, anybody who has any, I mean, I honestly thought about being a weirdo and putting somebody else number one, but I was just like, this is stupid. Like,
right. Well, there's a guy in this list we'll get to that I think was the most difficult to rate because, well, we'll talk about when we get to him. Who do you have number two?
It's your turn to go number two. We stagger him.
Kirby Smart.
Okay. Kirby Smart's my number two.
I went Kirby again. I could look up the numbers more. You think Georgia should be recruiting like this, but they weren't recruiting like this before he got there. He built this and he basically sees the opportunities that are available in Georgia, and he's been dominating since his second class. So to me, Kirby was easy as a number two.
He transformed Georgia into a solid program, into an elite one through recruiting. It's that simple. I almost put him number one.
Yeah.
Because of that, and he actually won a national championship now, so people can't say he can't win on the field. But he
did what Nick Saban did.
But Nick Saban's the teacher. You can't put him up ahead of the teacher.
Right, and also Saban does it in a state which doesn't have as much talent as Georgia, too. So I don't think you would have to really come up with an argument to put Smart ahead of Saban.
Okay, my list gets wonky, okay, because this is a podcast, and I didn't just want to list off the top 10 teams in a row.
Are these takes kind of toasty?
I don't know if they're toasty, but my number three is Mack Brown.
Not crazy at all. I've got him four. I'm
okay.
So my three is
because we're also taking into account where they are, what their program was before they got there.
Those are two huge factors.
Yeah,
that's almost more important than what their rankings.
And I've sat in an office with Mack Brown, and did a story on him, and like got to sit one on one with him in his office. That dude is smooth. Like, I mean, I was like, I'll play for this guy. Like, I mean, he seems to genuinely care about his players. He has a deep passion for the university that he's at.
He's good people, as they say here in the South.
Yeah, and he's also completely transformed the recruiting results North Carolina has had. Now, like, if you, there's multiple ways of doing this list, right? And doing this list is, you can might think, like, who would you hire right now to build your program around? And it's like, I might not hire Mack Brown. He might not be my top three choices to hire around because of age and certain on the field results so far.
Results haven't been there, but
as it pertains to recruiting, yeah, I think Mack Brown is certainly a top three coach in America, and I'd be very curious too to see him. I mean, hell, he won a national championship at Texas, and as the years go on, it seems more and more like an impressive feat that we never will understand. So, I mean, I think that he is a hell of a coach, and I really do believe that North Carolina is going to get off over the hump on the field eventually. It's the same thing I kept saying about Georgia in the mailbags, Mitch. Eventually, they're going to win a national championship, and it happened. Now, I don't think that North Carolina is recruiting nearly well enough to win a national title, but they certainly can be a legitimate contender in the ACC.
They shouldn't be going 6-6. Okay, so I have Mack Brown fourth. Number three was the former head coach at Florida International, Mario Cristobal.
Yeah, mine's four. He's four on my list.
So our top four are the same, just different order.
Yes.
And because of sort of like Wooden Mack Brown, just where he – what his class is at Oregon relative to where we think they should be based largely on the available talent in his backyard.
Yeah, I mean, also, too, the reason why Mario Cristobal is on my list is because he recruited the best recruiting class in the history of Oregon football at a place where he was forced to recruit nationally, and he did it from multiple states all over the place.
Yeah.
I'm very curious to see if, like if you were, like, coming up with a head coach that Miami could hire that could 1,000% change the viewpoint of, like, what you think of the U, like, Mario Cristobal is the slam dunk hire. So, like,
if you built him from scratch,
if we're wrong,
that's who you built.
Yeah. If we're wrong about him being this high on in the coaching hierarchy, then we're going to find out real fast. But if we're right, I think Miami has a chance to be as good as they've ever been. Maybe not, like 2002 U or 2001 U, but like they could be really, really good if he can like start landing the prospects in Miami again.
Right, I don't like using this phrase sometimes because, like, what are you going to do, shut down the program? But a lot of times you say, like, if this guy can't get it done, no one's going to get it done. But that's kind of where we're at right now with Miami. And one thing we didn't talk about with news and notes before, one of the 3 5 stars who remains uncommitted, Shamar Stewart, defensive lineman, looked heavily like he was going to be go to Texas A&M. Miami making a strong push there. So that would be another huge coup for the Canes. So this is where it got really tough for me. We, like we just said, we both agreed on our top four different order. I've got Jimbo Fisher number five.
Okay, my number five is Ryan Day.
Okay, I've got Ryan Day six.
Okay, Jimbo Fisher is my sixth.
Okay, so this is Ryan Day to me was the most difficult to evaluate because the results are fantastic. Like even this year in the number four class, his average player rating was third. It was great, but he took over a program that the ball had already been rolling, whatever.
But at what point Jimbo, at what point can he separate himself from that? Like if he
just the more he does it, I guess. But to me, this isn't fair, and who cares what our lists look like relative to like what he does? But like he doesn't care. But he will always be the guy that took over. Like so far,
so in year 11, guys if he signs list, the number one class in the country, is he still going to be the guy who took over for Urban? Like at a certain point, he's not that person anymore, right? Because longevity is a hard thing to have.
Sure, definitely. But so far, he's the only guy that we've talked about that didn't build it himself. Basically, like didn't escalate. Now,
if he built this himself, he might be number two.
Yes, right. So that's why I have Jimbo Fisher higher. Because first of all, he recruited well at Florida State. He had some great classes there. But what, you know, signing one of the best classes in the history of, in the modern day recruiting era at Texas A&M put you pretty high on this list.
Yeah. Also, you know, being able to recruit nationally, even though Ohio State was built as a gift, and Ryan Day's kind of a, you know, I covered both. Him and Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer sometimes is like talking to a robot, and Ryan Day is a very personable guy that connects well with families. And I don't just do it because, oh my God, he has a bunch of top five classes. It's like I do it because I know the man, and I think that he's a very good recruiter in the sense of being able to connect to people. So, like, I don't know if he's going to be as good at Ohio State as Urban Meyer was. Obviously, things didn't go well for him last year, you know, with the two loss season. But as it pertains to the things that I think he does well, recruiting is certainly one of them. And, you know, if you actually look at the interesting part here, Mitch, and I don't know if you've acknowledged this, is it was already built, but the results Ohio State has gotten, or at least gotten the 2021 class and maybe the 22 class, are better than any of the best classes that Urban Meyer put together. So it's like when Urban Meyer or a legend leaves a program, you might think, holy crap, how are they ever going to match that standard again? It's like in the recruiting realm, Ohio State's been better.
So that's what I was gonna add. I was gonna ask you, but that's my interpretation. That yes, he took over an elite recruiting machine, but they've actually been better under him.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that he's certainly a top five recruiting coach in America for sure.
I think he's a top.
And this is like this is hard because this is. I mean, I'm leaving out people that I really really like off this list so far.
Okay.
So like my number seven has to be Dabo Swinney, and I think that like him going down this low is kind of an insult, you know, and it's like I've had my things to say about whether or not I believe his long-term ability to be a top coach in America is tough, but he has two rings and has been one of the best evaluating coaches in America, has had his own vision, has his own rules, and they worked. And for me to put him outside of the top five is probably kind of an asshole move, to be honest. So, like, seven, I don't know that I believe that he's number seven right now, but I think that it would be unreasonable to move him down any lower than this.
I've got him eight.
Okay. So who's your seven?
Lincoln Riley.
Yeah, this is... I would... Here's my thing with Lincoln Riley, because Lincoln Riley's my seven... My eight.
Okay.
Lincoln Riley never signed an elite class, like in the Alabama, Georgia, even Oregon sense. Well, maybe not Oregon, but, you know, the elite type of class that you need... At Oklahoma.
His best class was six.
Never signed a top five class at Oklahoma.
Yeah, maybe I should have Dabo ahead of Lincoln Riley.
Which is fine.
Especially because Dabo built where Lincoln Riley inherited.
Dabo is the best building coach in America outside of Nick Saban, without question. And maybe even more impressive because Clemson didn't have the history and the tradition that Alabama had.
Yeah.
So, but Lincoln Riley, I think if we redid this list in 4 years, we'll be in the top five because now he's exposed to a level of talent that is predispositioned to consider USC, and everybody who went to Oklahoma had to consider Texas and Texas A&M on top of it. So It's an easier place to recruit, and I think the results will go up, and as you go up, you know, those things will, the perceptions will change. But right now, if you're unable to sign a top five class at Oklahoma, then how could you be a top five recruiting coach in America?
Yeah. So our top eight are the same, not in the same order. Okay.
I think we're probably going to veer off now because my last two are kind of weird.
Okay. I've got James Franklin 9.
I knew he was going to be on your list. He's not on my list.
I had him second, but I figured you'd just.
Nobody that has dropped the ball the way that he dropped the 2021 class is ever going to be on my list.
I just think that's one class.
That's one more than anybody else on my list has.
Okay, well, I'd have to see who's late on your list later. So, who's your 9?
My 9 is Mark Stoops.
He's my 10.
Mark Stoops is
actually, I have a three-way tie for 10, but I had to pick one, so I went Mark Stoops.
And that's why you have honorable mention. But yeah. I picked Mark Stoops because they've landed some big-time commitments at Kentucky that Kentucky never would have gotten. So at the highest level, but also, what do we talk about on the show all the time? We talk recruiting. About coaches. We talk about coaches who can come up with an identifiable plan, execute that plan, and prove that that plan works. And how rare is that? Like, how many coaches in college football can you actually say have a plan and then execute that plan and then see the success of that plan? Like, honestly, like 5? And especially at a program like this, and like Mark Stoops has executed his plan, which is to attack the leftovers in the state of Ohio that don't go to Ohio State and create a really good program. Also elevating the results that he's gotten, like the top player in Kentucky the last few years, and, you know, doing what he's done from a top level's talent. And then, of course, the results are that they aren't a joke in the SEC anymore and actually, you know, beat Florida. They push really, really good teams. And Kentucky is certainly at the best point in program history as a result of Mark Stoops' recruiting success.
Okay, how much recency bias do you have? Because know it's you'll just say it's Kentucky, but he didn't have before this year. He had one top 30 class. Is that factoring Kentucky?
We also are factoring in Kentucky.
I'm just being devil's advocate. I'm not disagreeing with you because I have him number 10.
The reason why I picked him is because I think that his recruiting strategy resulted in the transformation of a program. So that doesn't mean that I think he's going to go out-recruit Alabama tomorrow. I think that what he did for Kentucky standards is as impressive as anybody's done at their program.
Okay, fair.
And the reason why he's a head coaching candidate in every major coaching vacancy in America now.
Yeah. My two honorable mentions, or have you done your 10? Who's your 10?
Eli Drinkwitz.
He's on my, okay, my two honorable mention guys are Eli Drinkwitz and Greg Schiano.
Yeah, Greg Schiano, I think the thing with Greg Schiano is that, like, his hand fits perfectly in the Rutgers glove.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know if, like, Greg Schiano would, like, go to the University of I don't know.
Like, how would he do it in North Carolina? Yeah.
North Carolina. I think that, like, his genius is tailor-made for his program. Not to take it away, but.
Like, his job is to recruit to Rutgers, so he's good at it.
Eli Drinkwitz is changing Mizzou, I think, slowly. Now, in that conference, with everybody's good, it's harder to get the on-the-field results, so I don't know if people are going to appreciate it. I just wanted to include Eli Drinkwitz on this list because he deserves the acknowledgement of the work that he's doing.
Just because he offered Andrew Paul, your guy.
No, yeah, oh, that's part of it, too, but he also showed up at a high school in a dump truck this week. So, was it a dump truck?
I think so. Yeah, something like that.
He's somebody who gets it. He got a top five player nationally in St. Louis, which never would have happened there before. What was the last time it happened with Dorial Green Beckham? Was he from St. Louis?
No, I think he was from somewhere in the central Missouri, I think. But
he was an in-state prospect.
I don't know, five. So they've gotten some elite defensive linemen at Missouri in the recent years. So, like, getting a top 50 player isn't common,
they're out-of-state recruiting, too. Like, I think I read a stat somewhere that said, like, they never got a four-star prospect from out of state, like in any of the previous like 5 years or something, and now they've got like 3 or something like that. Like they are,
and the quarterback this year, Sam Horns from Georgia.
Yeah, their best player in their class outside of Burton is an elite level quarterback from the state of Georgia, and he's going to Mizzou. So, you know, also Tyler Macon last year,
your guy, yeah,
you my wrote guy. Like I wrote, I mean, I think that they have the nuts and bolts of what it takes to be a successful program, and you know. Also, as much about recruiting as, like, vibe, too, right? Like, what's the vibe of a program? Like, I think the vibe of Mizzou has completely changed since he took over as head coach.
Yeah. They've signed four four stars. Dorial Green, Beckham, Luther Burden, Terry Beckner, and Sheldon Richardson. So two defensive linemen and two wide receivers. And so let me see where Green Beckham was from. I believe somewhere in Springfield, Missouri. Yeah, I think that's more central Missouri. So I asked you yesterday, like, when we were doing this, how do we factor in new coaches? Like Marcus Freeman and Dan Lanning would be guys we'd consider, and we just kind of like...
You know the one that I almost considered?
Who?
Billy Napier. That guy is rocking shit right now.
Yeah.
He's doing an amazing job, I think.
Yes, and...
Already. Like, he's already... Like I just said with Vibe, like, the idea of what Florida is capable of doing has completely shifted in my mind.
Yeah, if Florida...
From what it was before.
I mean, this isn't a revolutionary thought here, but if Florida could just live up to its potential, the Florida-Georgia series over the next 5 to 10 years, we could be what we thought or hoped Harbaugh, you know, Urban Meyer / Ryan Day would be, like a 10-year war type thing in the SEC East.
Yeah, if Florida was good, it'd be good for the SEC East.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. No, it'd be more fun. I mean, that's what I'm saying. We could just like five teams instead of just...
Yeah, no, I think that also Florida holds the key to Alabama, too. Like, I think if Florida starts saying, knock that shit off, no more.
And Miami.
You know, if both of those guys are going and Florida becomes a harder place for Alabama to recruit, and, you know, maybe Alabama just can recruit anywhere it wants now because it's Alabama, and it doesn't matter who is at those other places. But in theory, if Alabama has a harder time in Florida, I think that could shift the paradigm of the SEC East as well. So it'll be very interesting to see how things go. But Billy Napier, who I thought fumbled his press conference when he first got hired, has backed up his recruiting prowess with action, which is far more important. And I want to acknowledge that.
Sort of fits his personality, like just a no bullshit kind of guy. He didn't get up to that press conference trying to impress Ari Wasserman. I know, he's just said what he wanted to say, and he had full confidence in himself. They're also, man, Louisiana has lost a lot of players in the portal. A couple of them are heading to Florida, but because Florida has done well in the portal, so I'd be interested to see.
I think that there's an interesting thing that we should discuss though here real quick, Mitch.
Sure.
Omissions from the list that, like, people might have anticipated being on it. Like, okay. Brian Kelly was not on our list.
And he signed a top 10 class at Notre Dame in 2010. He signed three top 10 classes in the past 5 years at Notre Dame. I think that's good, but I don't think that gets you as a top 10 recruiter.
Jim Harbaugh?
Good next tier, but no. I mean, I didn't consider Jim Harbaugh. Did you?
He was in my pool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because of who he is, but.
So I'm looking at the top, you know, recruiting classes from, you know, last year, my Florida. So many, there's been so much turnover.
Michael
Locksley?
Mike Locksley, probably, but.
Yeah, based on where you're at, but.
Yeah. What about Luke Fickell?
Yeah. Based on...
Based on where he is
and
where
in development.
Is. Yeah.
Chip Kelly? I'm just kidding.
I think he's... Yeah, okay. I think you make the case that he's probably one of the worst ones.
Yeah, so...
And I wonder about... I mean, I think it might be lack of interest in it, you know? He doesn't strike me as somebody who's overly passionate about recruiting.
Right. Arkansas is a school that's recruited a lot better than most people would think based on their recent...
Sam Pittman,
but they recruited well under Chad Morris, too.
I'm very curious to see what Sonny Dykes does at TCU because he's done a very good job recruiting Dallas. And
yeah.
Now he's at a quote-unquote Power 5 program in Dallas.
Yeah.
PJ Fleck, maybe? He had a pretty good class.
Yeah. I mean, you know, once you get out,
I think we covered it.
Yeah,
though. Am I missing anybody?
No, I'm looking. I'm looking at like last year's ranking. Basically, I've got my spreadsheet of every class in the past 15 years.
Jed Fish.
He's just give him one more year. He's number one.
Yeah, but that was fun. That was fun. I wonder maybe if we could like incorporate that into it. Like we'll cut Landis out of the deal, but maybe we should do like our top 10 recruiting list of or top 10 head coaches of recruiting.
Yeah, it would be fun to do it every year subs. And just yeah. And tweak it every year.
Yeah, maybe we'll do that. How about we do that in February after the signing period?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Or we could do like a roundtable too, me, you, and Landis, if you want to get your best friend in.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
All right. Well, one of the questions from Boots. Good name. What's up with PJ Fleck? He seems really polarizing among high school coaches that I know. Evidently, Boots is he's got his boots on the ground with the high school coaches and Gopher fans in general. Is his shtick genuine or fake, as some allege? Do you hear positive or negative things about him in the recruiting circles? His name came up a few times in the state recruiting article series, and not always in a good way. My interpretation of PJ Fleck from the outside, don't know him, is that he has a shtick, but it's genuine. Like, he's just a weird dude. Like, some coaches are fake. I don't think he's fake. I just think he's really weird, and some people love it, and some people don't. I've heard he's kind of difficult to work for, but I think he recruits well, probably better than Minnesota should recruit, and I don't know how long it plays for. Maybe he's a coach.
It's not shtick, though, if that's who he is, and I think that's who he is.
Do you agree with me that he's just a weird dude?
Yeah, yeah. Like, when Kerry Combs got hired by Ohio State a few years ago and he came into the press conference screaming and acting all enthusiastic, I was like, God, this guy's an asshole. I can't deal with this every day. And then you get to know him, and it's like, that's who he is. So it's like, I think it's one of those things where it's like, as you get to know somebody, you realize that that's who they are, and if they're actually that enthusiastic about what they do every day, it's kind of endearing. So, like, at first, I thought that PJ Fleck was kind of an asshole. Like, I was like, I can't deal with this. Let's row the boat crap. Like, let's just, you know, put together a football team and recruit and be a human.
Yeah.
And then I, like, talked to him on the phone a few times and wrote a few stories about Minnesota. And I was just like, actually, I like him. You know, I think that this is somebody that I could play for because he genuinely believes in the direction of his program. I think he genuinely cares about the kids that he recruits. And I can understand why in a recruiting confidential story, people would say, I don't like that guy, because they probably were only exposed to him one or two times. And I think with personalities like that, Mitch, you need, the more you're around somebody like that, the more you're prone to like him, and the less you're around them, the more you are to think that they're fake. Right. So
my guess is that, like, and this might not be fair, but there's probably some old school coaches out there that just don't like him because they don't like his
shit. It's just like some guy who's been at his high school for 37 years. Right. Like, can we talk about ball here? I'm not trying to talk about rowing any boats. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I can understand how somebody that enthusiastic could rub somebody the wrong way. But I think generally speaking, the results at Minnesota have spoken for themselves.
Totally agree. This is an interesting question from Randall F. Baylor has now had the best team in the state of Texas for two out of the last three seasons. How can Dave Aranda's program translate success on the field to greater success on the recruiting trail? Is there a clear roadmap for how to improve in that regard, or are there structural factors that put a ceiling on Baylor's recruiting potential compared to Texas, A&M, OU, etc.?
But that's what's so crazy about Baylor, dude, is it's like Baylor has had different coaches, and they've had terrible things happen there.
Right.
And they've still, like, continually transcended to be a very good football team every single year, regardless of coach.
That's what should happen in Alabama. Years. Like, it should just, like, no matter what happens, they just keep reemerging.
If what happened with Art Briles happened at other programs, their program would be decimated. Like, the fact that they were playing for a Big 12 championship, I mean, honestly, and if you think about since the beginning of the playoff, Baylor is probably in the top 10 percentile in America of teams who were in the college football playoff discussion at all.
Yeah.
Like, they were in the discussion the first year, you know, with TCU and Ohio State to get in. So, like, I don't know like as it pertains to recruiting results, I think that's interesting. Like Waco was kind of far away, but not that far away, you know, from some major cities in Texas and Dallas and stuff. But like, they've done really, really well considering. So I don't know if it's Dave Aranda's genius or is there just something about Baylor that continually props up their program to having better than expected results because they've been a model of consistency the last 10 years, haven't they?
Not really. I mean, they've had their dips, you know, and a lot of it was because of the post-Art Briles stuff. Matt Rhule came and did a great job.
Dips happen. Like,
but Aranda's first year was not good. Matt Rhule's first couple years weren't good. Then he went 6-6 1 year and then like 10-2.
But multiple coaches have done really well there, is what I'm saying. Like, I'm not saying that they've been a 10-win team for 9 straight years, but if you go back and you look at the last 3, 4, 5 head coaches, they've all found some success at some point in their tenure. And when we're talking about teams like LSU or places like Ohio State, where the program supersedes the figure that leads them, then I also wonder, like, if Baylor, there's something about Baylor that helps prop them up, regardless of who the head coach is going to be. If that person sticks through it, they're going to find success.
And oh, by the way, they won the national championship in basketball, too.
So yeah, it's the same thing in basketball as well.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's crazy. Yeah, and they had more horrific things. Well, I don't want to rank the horrificness of things that have gone on in Baylor in the past 20 years, but you know, what amazing success by that athletic department. We talked about this one a couple weeks ago, but I'll just bring it up again. Tom W., what can Tony Elliott and Brent Pry do to seal off the borders of Virginia from poachers such as Mack Brown? Does the addition of another FBS school, James Madison, to the mix change the outlook for the big brothers at Virginia Tech and UVA? I mean, I think the simple answer is just recruit better. Don't let Mack Brown come in and beat you.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason that North Carolina...
I mean, everybody can say we're putting a fence around the state. It's just a matter of how, like, dedicated you are to it. When Mack Brown took the job at North Carolina, he sent assistant coaches to every single high school in North Carolina, regardless of whether they've ever had a Power 5 or will ever have a Power 5 kid ever again.
Right.
Like, you have to be dedicated to the cause. It's not just like, oh, we're going to try really hard to recruit the state and do a good job. You got to, like, bust your ass every single day to own your state, and that means dedicating time, resources, and money into getting people into the high school hallways. That's the only way.
And you could argue that Baylor, no matter what it does, is not going to out-recruit Texas or Texas A&M over maybe in a single year, but over a five-year period. They're just fan-based, whatever, tradition. But there's no way, there's no reason that Virginia and or Virginia Tech should be out-recruited by North Carolina in its own state. Like, North Carolina is a great school, but it's not like they've got... Virginia Tech has more recent tradition. Virginia is a great school, just like North Carolina. Those schools should be on equal footing in recruiting. There are a lot of schools that aren't on equal footing, so it's just, like you said, just be better at it.
Yep.
Let's see. We got... you want to go a couple more? I got a good question this week, but this one's... we'll just kind of reinforce what we talk about all the time. From Jesse K. If schools like USC, Miami, Florida, Michigan, and UT, I don't know if it's Tennessee or Texas, but it doesn't matter.
It's Texas.
All start to recruit at the level they should be capable of, how much of an impact will have on Bama, Ohio State, Georgia, how many cycles of consistent recruiting it would take for the current powers to see a legitimate decrease in out-of-state star power. So that's what we talk about every week. It's up to these next tier of schools to recruit better, and that will put a dent in the superpowers.
That's right. Three cycles of that, and I think we'll start to see the separation at the top come back to reality.
Yeah.
And it's all math. It's all math.
And here's another question and it's also another Slack message that you just ignored from me yesterday, but it's okay.
What?
Besides moving all practices and games to Maui, what would be your recruiting strategy if you were named the next head coach at Hawaii?
I would only recruit players from cold cities in the Midwest.
So Dayton, Ohio to Honolulu pipeline.
If I saw a 3-star receiver considering Purdue, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan State, and somebody else, I would offer that kid. Then I would do it 1,000 times. And I would try to build a Indiana-like class or a Purdue-like class in the Big Ten in Hawaii. And I would get all these people out to Hawaii and say, let's build the best football program and that we possibly can here. The thing with Hawaii is, I don't know, they were very stringent on their official visit policy.
Yeah. And it's a school, they're severe, they're tons of financial issues as a school.
So, like, I don't know, like, it would take financial investment to ever turn anything around. It's like, recruiting to Hawaii, like, what's your pitch? It's like, I don't know, come be badass at football in the most beautiful place on the face of the earth. But also, if you don't have the financial investment to see that through, it doesn't matter what your pitch is. So, like, that's also part of it. But I would recruit the hell out of the places that are cold. I would get people on airplanes to come to official visits, and I would say, we can build the best team in our conference, in you get to live in Hawaii for 4 years and get a solid education. Like, I would listen to that. Would you rather go play, I don't know, maybe if you're a Power Five snob, but like, would you rather play at Illinois or would you rather play at Hawaii?
I mean, the way Hawaii is currently, what's going on, Illinois, if Hawaii was at its peak and invested and all that stuff, like, I don't want to go, and I don't know this, like, I don't want to go in like a Hawaii's shoddy got a better room and all this stuff, you know.
I don't know what their facilities are off the top of my,
the best of the best. Now, Hawaii, some people think a fix, something that should be done in recruiting is to allow kids to sign whenever, like, let's say after their end of their junior year. No school would benefit more than Hawaii from if a kid could sign, like, on an official visit sometime in, like, in November and didn't have to wait till signing period. If you could get a kid to sign while on a visit, their recruiting would be better.
Hawaii's number 100 in the 2020 composite team rankings.
Well,
it's like, I think Illinois is probably, like, in the 70s somewhere. So I don't think that the gap between those two schools is as big as you think it is. Actually, yeah. Illinois is 52. Oh, so it actually is a pretty huge gap. Yeah. I'm an asshole. Okay.
So I saw something on Twitter that I thought was big news. Dylan Lonergan, one of the top 2023 quarterbacks, he tweeted committed, but he committed to the Under Armour football All-American game next year. So
look at you. Okay. Hit me with this big question now. I'm excited.
Okay. It's similar to a question we've done before, but it's a different year. The top 25 quarterbacks in the 2013 class. How many of them played in the NFL? Took a snap in the NFL.
How many did you say? 25?
Yeah, the top 25. Because remember, we did in the 2020, we did in the 2012 class, and you guessed like a high number, and it was not a high number.
Okay, so like now, 7.
Don't you learn from your mistakes?
Was that too high?
Yes, way too high. 3.
Took a snap?
3.
I mean, sorry for believing in the rankings, you know? I bet you, do it, you know what? Next week, and I won't look this up, do 2016.
Okay.
Maybe it's too early, but I guess taking a snap in the NFL and playing in the NFL are different, which is probably my problem. But who are the 3?
Christian Hackenberg, number 2.
Unreal.
Joshua Dobbs.
Unreal.
Number 12. Jared Goff, number 21.
So only one of them was successful?
Now, there's 6 others ranked outside the top 25 that have taken snaps. You ready for them?
Yep.
You okay there?
Yeah.
Okay. Davis Webb, 44, Texas Tech. Ryan Finley, 51, Boise State. I don't even know what team he's on, but he transferred to NC State.
Okay.
Baker Mayfield, 71. In fact, they didn't even have a school next to his profile on the list because, you know, he's a walk-on at Texas Tech. Here's one that needs an asterisk. John Franklin from Florida State. He was a wide receiver. He hasn't played much, but he's taking a snap. Mike White, New York Jet legend, number 81, South Florida, transferred to Western Kentucky. Number 115, the 115th quarterback, Logan Woodside, is a backup for the Tennessee Titans.
Oh, wow.
So I'll go over the top 10 from that class. Max Brown was number 1, Hackenberg 2, Shane Morris, Michigan 3, then transferred to Central Michigan, Cooper Bateman, Alabama to Utah, then maybe somewhere else, Kevin Olsen, BYU, Troy Williams to Washington, I don't even remember Troy Williams, Bryce Ramsey to Georgia, Cody Thomas to Oklahoma, Asante Woolard to UCLA, JT Barrett to Ohio State. He never took a snap in the NFL, did he?
No, he was on the Saints practice squad for a year.
And then, real quick, Hayden Reddick from LSU, I think he did transfer. Dobbs, Malik Zaire, Notre Dame, Jeremy Johnson, Heisman Trophy winner from Auburn. Do you remember that?
Yep.
They were a lot of hype preseason. Cole Stewart, A&M, Ryan Bird, Stanford, Aaron Bailey, Illinois, Damian Terry, Michigan State. Oh, sorry. I bolded the wrong one. There's another one. There's four. Mitch Trubisky, North Carolina.
Oh, yeah, so that's four. A big one to forget. Yeah. Okay.
Anthony Jennings, LSU, Goff, Matt Alviti, Northwestern, Cord Sandberg, Mississippi State, Kenny Hill, A&M, and Bucky Hodges from Virginia Tech.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So, good question.
It was. Maybe we'll do another year next week.
Yeah, I will. Don't cheat. So
I won't. I won't. Okay.
Good podcast.
I'm going to pick seven again.
Yeah. Thanks, Max C. Great question. Got us going there and maybe some story ideas in the future. I did my job, Ari. Time for you to do your job.
Thanks so much for listening to the latest edition of Stars Matter. I thought that was a really cool episode. I hope you did too. We'll catch you next week.